We often think of perception as passive. Light strikes the eye, vibrations enter the ear, molecules meet the nose, and the brain records the incoming data. The story we tell ourselves is that the world streams in unfiltered, raw, and objective. But perception is not a camera, nor a microphone. It is a translator, a sculptor, and at times a deceiver. Every act of perception is already an interpretation. By the time we see a color or hear a sound, our senses have filtered, emphasized, and discarded countless details. What we finally experience is not the world itself, but the world shaped through the lenses of our biology, our memory, and our beliefs. To explore this, we begin with something seemingly simple: color. Color seems like the most obvious property of the world. Red apples, green leaves, blue skies. And yet, the science of color perception reveals just how much of what we see is constructed rather than given. The science of color perception. Color feels solid and obvious. The grass is green, the sky is blue, the apple is red. These statements sound like objective facts, but they are anything but. The green of grass is not inside the blades. The blue of the sky is not floating above us. The red of an apple does not dwell in its skin. These colors exist only as experiences, constructions of the human nervous system. Light itself carries no color. It is pure energy, electromagnetic waves oscillating at different frequencies. What we call visible light is merely a sliver of the spectrum, from about 400 to 700 nanometers, sandwiched between invisible realms of ultraviolet and infrared. If our eyes had evolved differently, the palette of the world would be unrecognizable to us. Bees, for example, can see ultraviolet patterns on flowers that guide them to nectar, patterns utterly invisible to us. What we see as a plain yellow petal made to a bee appear as a landing strip painted in radiant UV. Inside the human retina, three kinds of cone cells respond preferentially to short blue, medium green, and long red wavelengths. But these cones do not act in isolation. The brain compares their relative responses to generate the perception of hue. In fact, two entirely different mixtures of wavelengths can stimulate the cones in the same proportion and produce the identical color sensation. These metamers are proof that color is not a property of light itself, but of the interpretive machinery of the eye and brain. Even more remarkable is how much the brain corrects and stabilizes our visual world. Under warm candlelight, the wavelengths bouncing off a white page shift dramatically toward yellow-orange. Yet to us, the page remains white. Under the cold blue of twilight, the same page still appears white. This phenomenon, color constancy, is the brain's way of preserving stability, compensating for context so that objects retain their apparent properties. What we call white or green is always relative, always recalibrated, always an approximation. And then there are the illusions. The viral photograph of the dress, seen by some as white and gold and others as blue and black, was not a trick of editing, but a revelation of how different brains resolve ambiguous lighting conditions. Each viewer's visual system made a different assumption about the background illumination, and from that assumption, the entire color world shifted. Such examples remind us that color is never raw data. It is interpretation layered upon assumption, filtered through millions of years of evolution. Our experience of a stable world is less a mirror of reality than a compromise, a dynamic guess constructed for usefulness, not truth. When the senses cross, synesthesia. If color perception already reveals how much of the world is constructed inside the brain, synesthesia takes this revelation even further. Synesthesia is the phenomenon where the senses blend into one another, producing experiences that seem foreign to most of us. Numbers that appear with their own colors, sounds that conjure shapes, words that carry tastes, or days of the week that arrange themselves in a mental calendar of spatial positions. For someone with grapheme color synesthesia, the number 7 might always be yellow, while Wednesday might appear as a soft shade of blue. For a sound color synesthete, a violin note may glow like silver light, while a bass drum might erupt as a red pulse across the mind's eye. These associations are automatic, consistent, and involuntary, not chosen or imagined. A synesthete cannot turn off the green of the number 5 any more than the rest of us can turn off the redness of a rose. For centuries, synesthesia was dismissed as poetic metaphor or eccentricity. Writers like Baudelaire and Rimbaud described colored vowels or perfumed sounds in their verse, but scientists regarded such reports with suspicion. It was not until the late 20th century, with advances in brain imaging and cognitive science, that synesthesia was accepted as a real, measurable phenomenon. Functional MRI studies suggest that synesthetes show unusual cross-activation between regions of the brain responsible for different senses, say, between the visual area for recognizing numbers and the color processing region of the visual cortex. Another theory holds that all human brains begin life with rich cross-connections, and that in most people, these are pruned away during development. In synesthetes, some of these bridges remain intact, giving rise to a more intertwined sensory world. But synesthesia is more than a curiosity of wiring. It is a reminder that perception itself is not cleanly divided. None of us experience the world in isolated channels. Vision is always entangled with memory. Sound is always tinged with emotion. The smell of a dish can summon a childhood kitchen. A melody can flood us with grief or joy. These are not secondary interpretations of neutral sense data. They are part of perception itself. Synesthesia simply makes visible what is already true in a subtler way. Our world is woven together from multiple threads, stitched by the brain into a seamless fabric of experience. It is my personal belief that many of history's great geniuses may, in some form, have lived with synesthetic tendencies, whether they named it or not. Consider Bernhard Riemann, whose deep mathematical insights were said to be inseparable from his sensitivity to rhythm and harmony, or Srinivasa Ramanujan, whose uncanny ability to spot numerical patterns bordered on the visionary. One wonders if their minds were not only analytical, but also cross-wired, if mathematical symbols carried with them textures, sounds, or colors that revealed structures invisible to others. They may never have been fully aware of these inner bridges. For them, such perception may simply have been the way things were. But through those hidden crossings, they saw patterns others missed, and what felt natural to them became genius to the rest of us. In this sense, synesthesia is not an exception to perception, but an amplification of its underlying truth. All perception is already a synesthetic act. The senses collaborate, memories color the present, and the brain builds a coherent story out of fragments. Synesthesia shows us what we often forget, that the boundary between sensing and meaning is thin, and that our experience of reality is always a construction, not a raw reception. Framing the world, belief, and the pre-processing of perception. If color shows us that perception is constructed, and synesthesia shows us how flexible that construction can be, then belief reveals the depth of its framing power. Our senses do not give us raw reality. They give us a world already filtered, emphasized, and interpreted in light of what we expect and what we believe. Modern neuroscience captures this in what is often called the predictive brain hypothesis. Instead of passively waiting for signals, the brain is constantly generating predictions of what the world should be like, and then adjusting those predictions with incoming data. In this model, perception is less like opening a window and more like updating a map. Reality becomes the meeting point of top-down expectations and bottom-up sensations. Beliefs serve as powerful anchors within this system. Strong convictions can tilt the balance so far toward top-down processing that contradictory evidence barely registers. This is why eyewitnesses can disagree on the color of a car or the presence of a weapon. Their brains are not lying. They are interpreting in line with what they already expect or fear. Consider the placebo effect. A sugar pill has no pharmacological power, yet when we believe it does, the body itself begins to alter its chemistry, releasing endorphins, lowering pain responses, even changing blood pressure. Belief becomes biology, and perception follows suit. The pain subsides, the relief feels real, because in every practical sense, it is real. Or take the classic invisible gorilla experiment. Participants asked to count basketball passes often fail to notice a person in a gorilla suit walking through the scene. The gorilla was there, on the raw footage, undeniable. But because the task framed attention so narrowly, the brain simply filtered it out. Belief in what was important, the passes, literally edited reality, rendering the gorilla invisible. Culture magnifies this effect. Anthropologists note that languages shape perception of color. Some cultures divide blue into multiple distinct categories, while others lump blue and green under a single word. Speakers of those languages genuinely perceive the boundaries differently, their eyes guided by their words. What counts as signal or noise, pattern or randomness, beauty or banality, all of this is framed not by raw input, but by the conceptual scaffolding we inherit and endorse. Even philosophy saw this long before neuroscience gave it names. Kant argued that we never encounter the thing in itself, noumenon. We encounter only phenomena, appearances shaped by the categories of our mind. Nietzsche sharpened the point. There are no facts, only interpretations. Modern cognitive science only strengthens this insight. The paradox, then, is clear. Perception is our most direct line to reality, yet it is also our most artful construction of it. We do not simply see what is there. We see what our brains and beliefs are prepared to see. To live as though our view is raw truth is to mistake the painting for the landscape. Living with filters, from color perception to synesthesia to the framing power of belief, one truth repeats itself. The world we inhabit is never raw. It is filtered, cross-wired, stabilized, and shaped before it ever reaches awareness. What we call seeing or hearing or knowing is already interpretation, already a construction that our biology, memory, and convictions collaborate to produce. This is not a flaw of perception. It is its genius. Without these filters, the world would overwhelm us. Too much light, too much sound, too much motion, all arriving at once. The brain edits, compresses, and recolors reality so that we may live within it. We survive not by seeing everything, but by seeing enough. Perception is not about truth. It is about coherence. And yet, what grants us stability also binds us. Belief becomes a lens so powerful it can render gorillas invisible, make sugar pills into medicine, and turn simple melodies into spiritual revelations. We see what our convictions prepare us to see. We miss what they tell us is irrelevant. In this sense, every worldview is a kind of synesthesia, an entangling of sense and meaning. Only we rarely notice it because it is shared. Synesthesia, then, is not an anomaly but a mirror. It reminds us that boundaries between senses, categories, and meanings are porous. For the synesthete, numbers may glow with colors. For the rest of us, a rose may carry the weight of a memory, or a minor chord may taste of sorrow. Genius may arise when these crossings intensify, when a Riemann senses mathematics as music, or a Ramanujan perceives numbers as patterns too vivid to ignore. Creativity, at its root, may be the art of noticing the bridges that others overlook. So what do we do with this knowledge? We practice humility. We hold our convictions, but we hold them lightly. We learn to ask not only what do I see, but what am I being prepared to see? We recognize that perception is not a mirror, but a lens, and every lens can be adjusted, widened, or polished anew. This awareness does not strip the world of wonder, it multiplies it. To realize that color is the brain's invention makes a sunset no less beautiful. It makes it more astonishing. To know that beliefs filter reality does not diminish meaning. It makes us more responsible for the meanings we choose. The very act of seeing becomes sacred when we know it is never simple. And so we end where we began, with the simple act of noticing. Notice the redness of the apple, the strangeness of sound turned into music, the invisible scaffolding of belief. Notice that perception is both gift and prison, clarity and illusion. And in this noticing, we may find a freedom, not the freedom to see reality unfiltered, but the freedom to see our filters and to hold them as companions rather than masters. Perception is not a window onto the world. It is the story our mind tells us so that the world may become livable. The invitation is to become co-author of that story, curious, attentive, and willing to remember that reality is always larger, stranger, and more mysterious than we can ever contain.